Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or the Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, I have an episode today that's going to knock your socks off. Okay. So I have with me my new friend, Dr. Nay. This is Dr. Nadine Macaluso, and I'm going to have her tell you her whole story. But Dr. Nay was married to the Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort, and is here to tell her amazing story of surviving, thriving, and what she's doing today. And she's going to tell us all the things you want to know about trauma bonds, about picking the same partners over and over again. Dr. Nay, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Yes. It's hard to date today.
Girl, say it again for the people in the back. It is hard to date today. And well, can you just start out? And I'm going to give you the floor. Tell us your story. You know, some people might have seen the movie. Many people might not have. I think most people are familiar with the moniker. But just, you know,
tell us
your tale.
Yeah, so so I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I was raised in the 70s, which was a great time to be a child. I do say that. No internet, no phone, right? And I was raised with a very psychologically oriented mother. And she was reading Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung then, and we would always talk about our feelings, and it was a very open household. And so I was a very charmed childhood, and but she was a single mother.
And just so, you and her.
And my brother. So my dad was in and out of my life, you know, not abusive, but like what we would call a Disneyland dad. You know, literally, come take us to Disneyland, but let her do all the heavy work.
Right. He was the fun guy.
He was the fun guy. And so being raised by a single mom, I was really on my own financially since I graduated high school at 17. And I went away to college for a year. It was not for me at that point in my life. And so I started to model because I needed money. You know, I lived in Brooklyn, and New York City and Brooklyn are very expensive. And so I started to model. And as the movie, The Wolf of Wall Street depicts, I went to a party, and that night changed my life forever. I met my ex-husband.
Tell us about the party. Like, what happened?
Yeah, so I went to
the party. This was a capital P-A-R-T-Y, why?
This was a party. And I was 22. I was with my boyfriend. And I go into this big, grand, you know, beautiful white house, contemporary house on Dune Road in West Hampton Beach. And I walk in and I felt weird. I was like, what's happening at this party? Now, I didn't know they were all on Quaaludes. I didn't even know what a Quaalude was, of course, at 22. I mean, wine was good enough for me at that point, wine and beer. And so it was a strange feeling. And somebody like the movie shows actually did expose themselves to me. So I left down his pants. And I felt so embarrassed and so much shame. You know, it's interesting how victims feel that, you know, even though the other people, the perpetrators don't. And I said to my boyfriend, we got to get out of here. I felt terrible. So we left. But I guess my ex-husband had seen me. And I guess I seemed like an object that he wanted to have, because that's the way these people are.
Stunning.
And then he pursued me. And, you know, he was married at the time. But he pursued me about 6 months later, you know, telling me the typical, he's separated, he has an apartment, and he actually paid somebody $15,000 initially to take us to dinner.
Tell us about this. Like, what the hell? Oh, like, well, first of all, who does that, Jordan Belfort? But tell us how that happened.
Yeah, so this woman kept calling me, calling me, calling me. And I said, why is this woman calling me? So finally, that was when we had answering machines, you know, they had to leave the message. Yeah. And so I was like, hi, what do you want? She's like, oh, I want to go to dinner. And I thought, okay, it's a little strange. But, and she said, that guy, Jordan Belfort's going to go. And I said, what's he coming for? And she said, what do you care? I said, I don't care. Just think it's weird. Isn't he married? So, but unbeknownst to me, they had set the whole thing up. And so I was sitting at dinner with her and he comes sauntering out with his cowboy boots out of his white Testarossa and sits down. I have no idea that I'm set up. I'm from Brooklyn. He's from Queens. And I'm just chatting with him. We got along brilliantly. Then the next day he drove, that night he drove me home and I was like, maybe he does like me. And then the next day, as the movie shows, I had like 1,200 square feet of flowers in an 800 square foot apartment.
What did you think at that moment?
Were I
you
thought
like,
this guy's
what?
Yeah. I was like, my friends, I was actually having a birthday party for my girlfriend that day. And all my friends were over, they're like, come on, you didn't sleep with him? I said, sleep with him? I barely know him. He just drove me home. And then I really didn't see him for 6 months because I had just done my Miller Lite commercial and I was going to Chicago actually to model.
Oh, where were you?
I don't know where I was, but I remember driving through Wisconsin and there was a lot of cheese farms. I don't remember exactly, but I love Chicago. It was a beautiful city. And then when I came back that Christmas was when we saw each other at the gym and that's when we officially started to get together. Yeah, so it was an interesting beginning.
So, okay, you get 1,200 square feet of flowers. And now are you like, okay, game over, or you're married, or how did you say no? Like, what happened between then and six months later?
You know, that I really wasn't, I mean, this sounds weird to say, I really wasn't impressed because I didn't like him. I'd already had, I think I was, who knows, was saying like three other guys, who even knows who I was dating at that point. And he was married, so I just didn't even think about it. Right? So I just was like, all right, this guy's a little nutty, you know? And then I went on my way, he went on his way. And I was so wrapped up in trying to make money and, you know, really pursue my career. It's a very challenging career to have, you know.
For sure.
And, yeah. And so I was, you know, I was really based on my survival, not really thinking that much about him. And then 6 months later, when we went on that first date that time, then it was game on.
Okay, so you guys meet on the elliptical. I'm kidding. You run into each other.
Basically at the gym.
At the gym.
Yeah, and it was the Vertical Club. It was legendary in New York.
Oh, that's awesome. And so he's like, hey, didn't I send you a helicopter full of flowers? Yeah. Do you want to have lunch tomorrow? And you're like, sure.
Yeah, I think he called me a lot after he sent me the flowers, but I blew him off. And then somebody said to me, you know, he's separated. You should go out with him. I was like, all right, I'll go out with anybody once. I mean, how bad could it be?
Famous last words.
Famous last words. Yep.
Okay. So now you're 22 years old. You're modeling. You're trying to make two ends meet at this point. And you go out on your first date. What happened? And then take us through the story.
On our first date, we really, again, got along very well. I think he was surprised I was smart. Because he kept mentioning that. And again, I was from Brooklyn. He was from Queens. So I think we had like a very similar background, which I think was very unifying. And we just really had a great time. You know, it was that simple. We just really had a great time. And we really quickly, a trauma bond starts, you know, just became obsessed with each other. Right from the beginning. And there was a lot of love bombing and, you know, gifts. And, you know, one day he sent his driver to my house with $15,000 in cash. And I was like, what am I going to do with this? And he was like, go spend it. I literally could not even spend it. I bought my mother a stereo. I was like, you know, you have to remember that was a lot of money. Because let's say that's probably like $50,000 now, right? Because this was, I don't even know what year it was, 1989.
Wow. That was a ton of money. That was like More than
100,000.
Like 2 years of college tuition.
Now. By the way, I'd like that money now if anybody wants to give it to me. Like,
hey, Jordan, do a drive-by later tonight.
Yeah, so there was just so much sweeping me off my feet and fancy dinners. And, you know, he extricated himself from his marriage and we were engaged in 6 months. So fast and furious, like a trauma bond, and married 6 months later. Because that's what he wanted.
Right. And you became the object of his affection and obsession. And I'm sure, and that's a really intoxicating feeling, especially for a 22-year-old who's trying to make ends meet.
Yeah. And especially for, you know, I always say this to my patients, you know, you have to remember nobody was talking about narcissism and trauma bonds and love bombing. This was so not even, nobody was talking about it. It wasn't even in the vernacular, like in the zeitgeist, nothing.
Nothing.
So I'm not, you know, based upon all those Disney movies.
And Pretty Woman and all.
Oh, Pretty Woman, that's right. I was like, oh my God, my prince has come.
Right. This is what's supposed to happen. He's going to pull up in the white limo and I'm going to be in my leather miniskirt on the fire escape in the back. And that's what we thought. I'm with you. I thought that we all thought the more the better. We were sold Disney, your prince.
We were sold all that. And so that was really the story, the myth of romantic love that we were fed.
Right. We should be swept off our feet. There should be grandiose gestures because this is Prince Charming.
That's right.
I like to say, what happens when you get swept off your feet? You land on your back looking like what the hell just happened, right?
That's a great, great way to say it. 100%.
And so now you're engaged.
Yeah.
And get married. Is anything in your gut saying anything right now in retrospect?
Oh, yeah. You know, this is the hard thing, is that all of this romance is going on and all this passion and intimacy is going on simultaneously while the coercive control was starting. And that's why it's so confusing, because the two things are going on at once, and we call that, you know, intermittent reinforcement. I didn't know that back then, but what was happening is he started the dominating behavior of, if you don't marry me, I'm not going to date you. If you don't have kids, I'm not going to marry you. And so all the threats started, which I was very upset about initially, but I could never set boundaries with him or fight him. And then I just went, oh, he just loves me so much. But my gut, I did a video about this when he asked me to get married, we got engaged. My gut said, uh-oh.
Wow. Unbelievable. Talk about something you just made casual reference to. And I know this is seminal in your work and for all of us. Talk about trauma bonds and intermittent reinforcement.
Yes. So intermittent reinforcement is actually what creates the emotional connection in the trauma bonds, ironically, because it's when your partner is about 70% of the time, they're cruel, controlling, dominating, intimidating, threatening. And then 30% of the time, they're generous and helpful and kind. And they're both extreme behaviors that cause extreme feelings in us that actually create the bond. That is the trauma bond. That's what creates it. And I write about this in my book, that there's research with animal trainers who use intermittent reinforcement with their animals. The animals bond 230% more than trainers that use straight kindness. So we know it makes people bond. Now, you wouldn't think it, but it does, because you never know what's coming. It's not really a cycle of abuse, because you never know when it's coming. And so it keeps you on your toes and it keeps you hoping and wanting that initial love bombing stage. You're always kind of reaching back for that. And so that's one of the conditions that has to be present for a trauma bond to exist.
It's almost like some of those studies that talk about slot machines and why they're addictive.
Yes.
Right? It's like you sit there and you put your money in, you pull the handle again, again, and again. And you feel like I fed it enough coins that the payout is coming if I just stick it out a little longer. Is that a good metaphor?
It's a great metaphor. And again, you know, it's the beginning of the romance when all the dopamine is going and you're just so ecstatic. And so it's really hard to make sense of what's really happening when those extreme behaviors are occurring, because we could get into a huge fight and then the next day I look at my driveway and I like to horseback ride, there'd be a horse. So I'm like, is he good or is he bad?
You're like, my pony, I got my horse. It's Disney.
Right. You know, so it's very hard to make sense of really what's happening. And if you're a trusting individual such as myself, you don't recognize that those are big red flags.
I love that you're correcting this, because I think a lot of people, maybe you can tell me if this can be a dual definition, that trauma bonding, sometimes people feel like, oh, well, I had a narcissistic dad and you had a narcissistic dad, so we're bonding over our trauma.
Yeah, right.
That's not it.
No, no. So it has to have the intermittent abuse, and it has to have the second condition, which is a power imbalance.
Mm.
So the power imbalance can occur if somebody has more resources, like clearly a power imbalance can occur simply because you love someone, they have power over you. We hope they don't abuse it, but they do. And also what happened with us, he gains a lot of power over me because he was so dominating and threatening and intimidating. I would fear him. Those two pieces have to be there for a trauma bond to exist.
So it was his personality. It was his financial status. It was like he was the sun.
Yeah, definitely. And I had to revolve around him. I could have no needs. I couldn't have boundaries. And I'm a very strong, independently willed woman. But again, I was just no match for him.
Right. I completely hear you. So, okay. So I digressed a little bit off the road. Come back and tell your story. So now your gut's going off, but you get married 6 months later, or 6 months, you get engaged 6 months after dating, married 6 months later?
Yeah. So we got engaged. My stomach said, uh-oh, we took the Concorde to Paris. That was when the Concorde was still around. So again, you know, the extravagant lifestyle and the love bombing just, you know, continuing. And then 6 months later, yeah, we got married. And we got in a huge fight the night before our wedding because he'd wanted me to get pregnant. I did get pregnant. I did have a miscarriage. But, you know, here this guy is telling me, I want to get married. I want to have a baby. And then he's wasted, you know, the night before our wedding. And I got, of course, furious with him. But I had 200 people. We got married in Anguilla on the island. And I was like, okay, I guess here we go. Yeah, so it was rocky from the beginning, but again, mixed. It was so rocky mixed with all these extreme gestures of love.
Right. And so it's like it's like you don't know north from south at that point.
No, and I was 23 at that point.
Right.
I knew nothing anyway.
Right. And like you said, you had a great mom, good dad, kind of bopped in and out a little bit. So nothing really, you had things to go on, but not, you know, it's like, okay. And we have Disney that takes over, like, okay, I guess this is it. And this is what I have to do. And now how did the drugs, did it just get worse and worse? Like you said, they started out with Quaaludes. I heard an interview with you, cause I was like, what is a Quaalude? You're like, it's like a sedative, but it's amazing.
It was amazing. I know, but it's not good to do drugs. And it can happen like with most addictions, starts out slow, right there, insidious. They build and they build and they build. And, you know, when you're dealing with somebody who has a lot of money and a lot of power, and everybody's saying yes to them, right? And I knew nothing about addiction, of course. And so the addiction, just like the coercive control and the abuse, just escalated.
Wow. And so now you have baby number one, baby number two, which, and You know, kids are amazing, but they don't make anything easier.
No, and you know, that's what happens a lot of times in these relationships. You know, you have a big fight, you feel violated, your boundaries are crossed, you don't feel heard. Then you wake up and you have a kid to take care of. You have family coming over for Easter, right? Life, like, and then you're just like, oh, hope is the hook. He'll be better next week, or he says he's going to change. And so you just stay and you stay. At least I did. And I think it's very common with the women that I work with.
And do you find that, you know, let's say it's 30-70, that intermittent reinforcement, we live for the 30, but over time, the 30 goes to 20, and then it goes to 10, and you're getting crumbs. And that's how, and we just, that's how it is. Is that, does that sound
I
right?
I would say that's very accurate. Yeah, for sure. And he just got crazier and crazier and crazier.
How did he get crazier? Tell us.
He just got more, how can I say this? He just, you know, in the beginning, I talk about how they wear a mask, right? We used to call it Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, but none of my young girls know that. So now I call it Dirty John and Romeo. Makes it a little easier for them. And so, you know, the mask just slips more often. Dirty John, the bad part just becomes more and more apparent because they can't keep it on all the time, right? And so, and you know, in a relationship, we all have emotional needs. So anytime I really expressed a need, it wasn't met. So loss of self is a huge thing in a trauma bond. Because you become a shell of a person because this person just becomes more dominating, more controlling, and it's all about them. Yeah. And that just started to just build. Now, again, with some little perks thrown in, right?
For sure. Every now and then you get that glimmer, you get that little cookie.
That's right.
Going.
And I remember we had a huge fight one night and I said to him, you know, the only reason anybody puts up with you is for the perks. Oh, wow. That didn't go well.
Oh, what happened?
Oh, he had like rage, like a tsunami. He left the house. He didn't come home for a day because he knew it was true.
Right. It's like you're buying people.
Yeah, I spoke the truth.
Right.
And, you know, that's one thing that when you're with a person like this, the more defensive they get, the truer you know what you said to them is real.
Oh, yeah. And the more they rage.
More they rage. And I didn't grow up a house with any yelling. So this anger and rage to me I was in a new land that I'm like, I've never been in this land. So hence why I put myself right in therapy. So I put myself right in therapy at the beginning of the marriage. Because I was like, I have no idea what's happening.
What did your mom say about all of this? If your mom was reading Freud and you were in the house talking about your feelings, was she losing her mind watching this?
Yes, yes. When I first got engaged, she said, she took me to lunch. She goes, you know, you don't have to do this.
Wow.
And I was like, no, but I do. I love him. You know, that young girl ridiculousness. Oh yeah. She was very concerned, but nobody could get through to me.
No.
No.
Where you're under the spell.
Yes, I'm in a trance. So she couldn't get through to me till she did.
And now speaking of till she did, let's flash forward. Things get crazier, the drugs get worse, all of the things, the partying. And now what was the straw that broke the camel's back for you?
Yeah, I have three.
Okay, let's talk about the three straws.
I had three. I had one, I told him, you have to get sober. I'm not going to sit here and watch you kill yourself like all of these yes men are doing for you. And he went crazy. Said, I'm going to leave you if you don't get sober. He took my jewelry and clothing, lit them in the fire, in the fireplace. He
literally just took your stuff, like the movie.
Yeah, and did that. And then he got violent with me, and there's the scene in the movie doesn't really depict what happened, but he told me he was going to take my daughter, and I tried to chase after him and he kicked me down the stairs, but luckily I was really young and in good shape and I chased him out, and he drove us both into the garage, But at that point, the police had come. And so they took him away and he did go to rehab. So that was great. But then a year later, he got arrested. And I just said, I knew I was safe once he got arrested, because I knew he couldn't hurt me anymore. And I knew he couldn't. It was clearly indicative that he was the more troubled person and I was not. And so I left. And in between the time that he kicked me down the stairs and he got arrested, I confronted him about all the pain that I had endured. And I said, you know, that was really hard, your drug addiction, the abuse, the rage. And he goes, wasn't that bad. And so the lack of remorse, which, I didn't know the word callousness, and I didn't know the word, you know, I didn't know what callousness was, but I can still picture myself sitting in that Japanese restaurant and something inside closing. So those were my three straws: the violence, the callousness, and then once he was arrested, I was like, bye.
So that was it. You're like, I'm pulling the plug. Resuscitate. Peace out. I'm out.
Yeah, I was done. Yeah.
Okay. So you get your kids. You go. He goes, he stays clean after that?
He stays clean. Yep. He stays clean. We had two homes. So he went to the Hamptons and I stayed in my house. And it was great. I felt free.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. It was great.
Things got better over time.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, I mean, listen, he did not want to get divorced, for sure. He didn't go to jail. He didn't get sentenced until 5 or 6 years later, which is quite common with that. And the interesting part is we've pretty much almost always gotten along since then, which is great because it's wonderful for my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, if we talk about the power imbalance, once he got arrested, we were even. And once that power imbalance shifted, right?
Yeah.
It changed everything.
And I'm not sure if it would mean that he could actually start to take accountability for his actions, but it sounds like the power came more towards the center.
That's right. Right. I don't know that he'll really take full accountability for that, but it didn't matter because I was gone.
You were done.
Yeah, I was done. That was it.
You're still young. You're in your early 30s at this point.
Yes, I'm in my early 30s. Yep, and I got two little babies. You know, they're 5 and 3. And luckily, though, in my marriage, I had started a little business. So I had a maternity company with a website and a catalog and a little store. So I had started to build my independence. And so I had that when I left him. And then about 2 years later, or a year and a half later, I met my current husband. And he lives in California. And I was like, we're moving.
Wow.
And because he couldn't stop me from moving, which was great, because I wanted my kids to have a fresh start. And I didn't want them to deal with that legacy that had nothing to do with them. And so we moved. And nobody knew anything in California.
Oh, my gosh. And how did you meet your husband?
On a blind date.
Okay. You didn't have to Bumble or Hinge it up.
No, I went on a lot of dates before that. Trust me, I was having fun dating. God, I was having way too much fun. But on a blind date, and we had a great first blind date. He had three little kids. I had two. We were both in the garment business. And we're together now 25 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So in your healing, you not only went to therapy, but you have taken on a new career. Tell us about this.
Yeah. So, you know, therapy was so, I always say, I believe therapy saved my life because it really allowed me to manage so much chaos. And after I left Jordan, I went to a clinic called the Karen Foundation and did a week-long program called Breakthrough to really, like, because when you're in a trauma bond, you're so obsessed with the other person because you have to be. So when I work with my patients, I say, you know, turn the mirror back on you, which is what I did. And so therapy and deep psychological reflection had been such an important part of my healing that at 39, I said, I'm going to go back to school and become a therapist.
And you did.
And I did. I got my master's, got my doctorate, and started, a great little private practice in Manhattan Beach, California.
Amazing. I love your life. Well, talk about, you wrote a book, which I love the title, Run Like Hell. So we're not mincing words here, ladies and gentlemen. If you see this character, Run Like Hell. So talk about, you call them the pathological lover, the narcissistic pathological lover. Talk a little bit about this, right? You might have had a little bit of an experience with it, but just pretend.
Yeah, just a little bit.
You know, a little bit.
It's when I started my practice developed, I really never wanted a specialty. It's so funny how things we resist happen. But I kept seeing all these smart, bright, beautiful, kind, amazing women in trauma bonds.
Right.
Betrayed, abused, controlled, lied to, manipulated. And I said, okay, I got to go back to the research, being the academic. And in 2019, I read an amazing book called Women Who Love Psychopaths by Sandra L. Brown. And the way she had written about the female in the trauma bond really turned its head on the whole thing and that I had read so far. And so I just kept digging and doing all this research on the dark tetrad. And I came to understand that these men are not just narcissistic. And we hear that word thrown around so much, but I call them pathological because pathological means mentally unwell. And I believe that anybody that will lie, betray, harm, exploit, and control people that they love to get their needs met for money, power, pleasure, and status are mentally unwell.
Mm.
And so they're usually just a lot more than a narcissist.
Wow, a lot more. And you just mentioned something, the dark tetrad. Talk about that.
Yeah, so the dark tetrad was a term that came to be in about 2002. And it's an umbrella term for people that have malevolent intentions. And so it includes narcissism, psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and sadism. And all of these traits kind of mingle, cross and mingle. And so that's what I was really seeing with these characters, that sometimes, they're very Machiavellian. And I mean, if you think about Jordan, he manipulated me to go on that first meeting. That's pretty Machiavellian.
To pay somebody $15,000.
Right.
And
right.
It's like the ultimate bait and switch.
Yeah. Yeah. And then psychopathy is the callousness and the boldness and the fearlessness and the impulsivity. And then you have narcissism, where you have vulnerable and grandiose narcissism, and sadism. Not everybody has that. That's a really sick person who gets joy out of just harming people that they know. But then they can have a substance use disorder, right? They're impulsive. They can have a sex addiction or a gambling addiction, like a compulsive process disorder, and they can have a mood disorder. So they are much more than just a narcissist. So that's why I came up with the term pathological lover, because people need to understand that there are bad people out there that you could be dating that don't present like that.
Let me ask you a question. You know, I've been date coaching men and women for 15 years and work a lot with probably a very similar client base and patient base that you have. Do you think that as people become more successful in their careers, they can start out as a decent, good human being? I've seen this with some of my clients. They marry their college sweethearts. They're both, rubbing two sticks together to try to make life. And then he becomes more and more successful over time.
Yes.
And there's a, and something that, because I can't go back and be in the marriage and watch the development. So I'm hearing reports from what happens later. It's like, no, he was great for the first 10 years or 20 years, but then something shifted. Can that happen?
Yeah, because I think that this person also is very entitled and can think that they're superior And I think that arrogance, well, I know that arrogance is a huge part of this personality. It's part of the antagonism. So, yeah, I think that as a person becomes more arrogant, they lose their humility.
Yeah.
And it can lend them to not be very kind to their lovers.
And they can become, they can become this pathological person. So the disease, the pathos, can be there from the get-go,
Yes.
or it can develop
Yeah,
at
it can
any point.
develop. Yeah, I think it was probably a little bit there. There were seedlings in there that maybe like, genetic expression that hadn't
Right.
expressed yet. But yeah, sure. I mean, money corrupts.
Yeah.
Power. Money gives power, right?
100%. And like you're saying, when you're with someone who doesn't hear no
That's right.
from anybody in their lives, and the more powerful you get, that you have a smaller and smaller tranche of people, if anybody, that say no to you.
That's right. That's right. And if they've been with somebody for a long time and the passion has died down and they become more complacent towards them, right? They can really devalue them and just be like, I'm not listening to you.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And sometimes many of them, to your point, they don't want to get divorced. They're like, well, I just want to have my cake and eat it too. But on the rare occasion, somebody will, the person, typically the man, will blow up his life and say, I want a divorce. I've met someone else. Right. And you're like, what the hell just happened?
Or they want, like you say, or they want to, or they feel entitled to have the double standard because double
Right.
standards are abusive. Lindsay Bancroft taught me that. And they're like, no, I can be married and have extramarital, but you can't.
Right. Of course not. And you need to be okay with this because this is
That's
part of the
right.
arrangement.
That's right.
Right.
So
Here's
it's
an
not.
envelope full of some money. Go shop, and here's our new arrangement.
Right. Right, but
Right.
that's, we're emotional beings and we're built for attachment, so that usually doesn't last.
Are there women, Dr. Ney, that are more susceptible to this?
Yes, and I was one of them. And I did not know that, and that's what I learned from Sandra Brown's work. She was working with women who were in these trauma bonds, but she was working with professional women, more like lawyers or doctors or just professional women. And she noticed that she gave them all this five-factor model personality assessment, which I have on my website. And it measures openness, conscientiousness, agreeableness, neuroticism, extroversion. And I'm sure I'm missing one. Neuroticism, extroversion. Am I missing one? No, I don't think so. So it spells ocean if anybody wants to look it up. And what she discovered is that women that score very high in agreeableness and conscientiousness are prey and magnets for these men because they're agreeable, meaning they're loyal and tolerant, and they're pro-social people like me, where relationships are everything to me, hence why I'm a therapist, and I'm my same best friend since I'm six. And their conscientiousness, they're very conscientious, meaning they're organized. They're diligent. They will get things done and they will see things through, which is great, except for you're in a trauma bond. And so what she discovered is a lot. So I think she says in her research 70%. And I've started to see the pattern in my practice because I give every woman the assessment that comes to me so I can educate them. Now, they all don't fall for that. Some are more dependent and have a different personality types where they score high. Some do have more developmental trauma, so their results look different. But when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, okay, this makes sense. Because if a woman comes to me and she's kind and tolerant and loyal, I'm not going to therapize that out of her. I'm not going to shame her.
No,
I'm
no.
not going to stigmatize her. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote my book. It was because I was so sick of the victim being stigmatized.
Totally, 100%. And to your point, these are successful professional women as well as others. But if you have these personality characteristics, as you're talking about them, like, wow, extroverted, conscientious, agreeable, I'm like, check, check, check.
Yeah.
Right. The work that we both do. right? And it's like, right. And so often you're right. I do see a lot of people that come from the service professions that tend to fall prey to these kinds of characters, because I call them, I simplify it to some extent. Yeah. I say, you know what? Givers and takers sometimes have a magnet to each other.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the title of my fourth chapter, Opposites to Attract. Right. And so if you think about it, pathological lover is highly antagonistic. A highly agreeable person is perfect for them. You can't have two antagonistic people. You'll have World War III.
Right. Great chemistry for about 4 to 6 months. And then it's World War III, because you can't have two people grabbing the wheel of the car.
That's right. That's right. You have to have one that's like, it's okay, honey, you do it. And I was that person. And again, you know, not because I'm weak. It's just because it's my temperament.
Yeah, right.
It's my temperament. You know, now I've gotten stronger, of course, as I'm a 56-year-old woman. That's changed a little bit. But also women are socialized to be more like that, right?
100%. And do you see men that fall prey to female pathological?
For sure. Yeah.
Me too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I write my book, you know, in that, you know, like focusing on women. But of course, it crosses genders, you know, any sexual orientation, right? People are people.
Yeah.
It's just the research has been more about women because, you know, we live in a patriarchy.
Right. In these heteronormative relationships. But I've seen, right, gay women that have been partnered up with a pathological, awful partner and try to extricate themselves. And it's no different than what you described.
Yep. Right. No, and this is the thing. And I say this to people, it can happen to anyone and everyone.
Now, let's say it's happened. How can you heal before you get back into the dating world? Because you did a lot of healing, a lot of work on yourself, I'm going to surmise, in order to, a couple years post-divorce, to meet this amazing man who is lovely and loving. And how were you able to make that shift to someone who is normal and didn't like activate your entire nervous system?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you've been in a trauma bond, I always think you never want to be in one again. So you will really do anything to not endure that again, because it's very painful. So I, like I said, I got really curious. I learned a lot about myself. And what I did was I just learned to trust myself more, as much as it's about learning to trust others again, because you do have to do that after you've been terribly betrayed. But I just learned to trust myself more again, because I had done the work. And, you know, back then, again, nobody was really talking about this, not even in my own therapy. But yeah, I just learned about myself. I learned about my attachment pattern. I learned about, I learned how to set boundaries. You know, I didn't even know what a boundary was till I was 31. I was talking about that. I was like, wait, I can say no.
Yeah. Like, thank you.
To really find my voice. And I say this to my patients, you don't find your voice to change anybody. You find your voice because you have to give your truth voice.
Yeah.
And however they behave, they behave. And so I just got older and more mature, as we do, right? And just got stronger. And that doesn't mean my marriage has been perfect, far from it. But we've both been willing to change and grow together.
Absolutely. And so for people to heal, it's work and it's going through therapy. If you find yourself in trauma bonds once, or many of my clients have been repetitively in a trauma bond, because I think human beings can be creatures of habit. And as much as you know, well, I know what a narcissist is. I've had people come to me, like I had a woman on my podcast who became a client who said, I was married to a narcissist and I did all the therapy. I did Eat, Pray, Love. I traveled the world. I was dating myself. And I got into my next relationship and married him. And he was a worse narcissist than the first.
Yeah, that's terrible. Well,
Yeah.
I think you have to go to a trauma-informed therapist. I think there's EMDR that you can do, and you really need to understand what your personality traits are. Are you reenacting developmental trauma, or are you wired, with this agreeableness of conscientiousness? What's your attachment pattern? And you really need to understand yourself and also learn about relationships. I mean, we go to school to learn about reading, writing, and arithmetic, but the fourth R, relationships, are the foundation of our lives. And people say to me, "Why'd you get your PhD?" I said, "Just to deal with my family." Now, the work on the side is great, but relationships are really challenging, And so come to people like you or like me that, we've made this our life's work, and reach out for help and don't isolate and don't be ashamed because it's just part of the journey and we don't know how to do it right, and that's okay.
And that's okay. And what we do for people that have come out of these trauma bonds, it's provide that gentle, supportive, that's good, that's not good. You would laugh. I think I told you when we were prepping for or offline before we got on, I'm you take a nerdy finance person and turn them into a dating coach. We have graphs for what healthy relationship
I
trajectories look
love
like,
it.
what narcissists look like, what failure to launch avoidance look like. So, and scorecards helping to
I love that.
capture your feelings right in the moment, because when you have been through little t big t trauma, maybe it started at home, maybe it was in your marriages, we tend to over time greenwash those red flags, right? Paint them green, because that's how we survived.
That's
Because
right.
that's how you deal with the 70% BS, is you rationalize it. You know what? I'm probably being too picky. I don't think that was a red flag. I'm not going to tell Bella. And then 6 weeks later, they're like, did I tell you that on
Yes,
our
yeah,
ninth
like that.
date that he didn't show up because he was blackout drunk? And I was like, you did not tell me that. So, din, 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 dating scorecards were developed
I
immediately.
love
And it's like,
that.
store
Dating
it
scorecard.
after, because then when
I
we
gotta
get
get
the
that.
real-time info, then I'm like, we're going to be able to help you with good input. I need you to trust your body, to trust your instincts, write them down in this format, and then we're going to help you. So that's we I always tell my clients, we're going to wrap you in pink sparkly bubble wrap and make sure that you don't get dinged up during this process while we're trying to get up Love Mountain. We're going to help you stay away from dumpster fire relationships. And what's better than that?
And you bring up a good point. I got my doctorate in somatic psychotherapy, and what I tell my patients is like the true self lives from here to here. Like I'm putting my hands to my pelvis, right? Under my from my throat to my pelvis, and like start to trust this, right? Because this comes up with ridiculous stories, the brain. We've reified the brain and just made it the most important thing and made thoughts the most important thing, but really the body doesn't lie. And don't override it and listen to that. It's very important.
Nadine, every client I have that comes from, a divorce, something traumatic, I'm like, when did you see the red flags? 99% of them were like, oh, they were there from the beginning.
Yeah, right. We drive by them.
We drive, right. And what happens in the dating process? And this is why we really slow things down. We have rules. 15 dates until exclusivity, and that's over 3 months. And the graphs show why. And it's really to watch what happens date over date, situation by situation. And what happens is when you slow down a process and you know that you have guides around you, you become more confident in yourself.
And that slowing down is so key because I always say intensity is not intimacy.
Amen. And when we narrow down our choices too quickly, as Disney tells us, get swept off your feet. There's a 3-date rule. Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. Done. You're oxytocin bonded. You've got blinders on. And that's why we're not dumb. What do we do? The obsessive nature of romantic love allows us to sweep the red flags under the rug. But we knew we had a broom in our hands. We just didn't want to say it. It's like, sweep, sweep, sweep. Yep, they were there. Here's the carpet. The red flags were there from the get-go.
They were there, yeah. And when you combine that with the thing that we are social beings, we're wired for connection. We're wired for love. And really, that's why everybody just wants to belong and be loved. And it's hard. I love your system. Oh my God, I got so many referrals.
Oh yeah, we've had zero divorces in 15 years.
That's so good.
It's, well, you know, when you measure three times, cut once,
yeah,
right? And sometimes our clients are like, come on, it's been six dates. I'm like, nope, you will just trust us.
Yeah,
we
trust
have a
the process.
Process. A trust fall. We will net the bad guys in 15 dates, right? Because people that are narcissistic, avoidant, typically if you're watching for it, what I've seen is at the latest 4 months post exclusivity, you start to see the cracks in the armor if you're looking for it.
That's when I started to see it. Yep. I didn't look to do it, of course. And it's okay because I have two beautiful children and I was young, but yeah, you know, especially if you've been divorced and you're back in the dating scene, what a great system. I love this because I'm very data driven as well. You know, my book has, I don't even know how many references in it because it's research based and that's what we have to go off. Research matters, data matters.
Research matters, data matters. Dr. Nay, where can we get more of you?
Oh, you're so sweet. We could talk forever. This is way too much fun. So you can find me at The Real Dr. Nadine on Instagram. I post daily. I answer all my direct messages. I love my community. We've built a really safe, beautiful community there. DrNay.com. Go to my website. I have tons of free resources, tons of free assessments, because you have to take tons of assessments to get to know yourself. You can't just rely on this to be reflective, right? You need data. And TikTok, which is so crazy, Dr. Nay LMFT, call it the Wild West of the internet. And that's really it. Yeah, and you can get my book anywhere, Amazon. I do a post where if you're in a trauma bond, get the ebook, right? Or get the audiobook, keep yourself safe. And I just feel blessed to do what I do.
Oh, you are doing God's work and a blessing to the world. So what an amazing story you have. And someday you're going to write your own autobiography because your story is amazing and so inspiring. And I'm grateful that you came on to share with us about your pivot. And smart daters, if you want to be inspired, just sit back and think about what Dr. Nay did with her life, the hellfire she walked through to heal, find a great partner, have a blended family with five kids and get her doctorate. That is some badass stuff. And you had Margot Robbie play you against Leo and with Martin Scorsese. You have led a very big, amazing life. And if you don't tell yourself that, I want you to know I see you.
Oh, thank you so much. So lovely, lovely to meet you.
The pleasure was all mine. Smart daters, get inspired. Do something big and awesome for yourself that brings you joy this week. And if you loved this episode, rate it. Tell us why you loved it because we read every single one. Until our next episode, we will see you again. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.